else need a Bible, you may be visiting with us. Good to see your happy, smiling faces this morning. All right. For those of you who are visiting, we are sinners, this group, who have been cleansed by the blood of Christ. Here to honor one another, but especially to honor Him. And we've been in a series, you might call it, of sermons entitled The One Another Way. Our first text was Romans, the 12th chapter. And I always encourage you to follow along with me in the Bible, not to take my word for it, but to open it up and read it. That prevents us from drifting off, because I know I'm not the most exciting voice to listen to. Romans 12:10. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. So for two lessons, we were focused on be devoted to one another. And we're going to move and look at another one another phrase, and that is in the same verse. Give preference to one another in honor. We are focusing on authentic, loving relationships. And when we do that as a group of Christians in a certain locality, and here it's in the Skagit Valley, what is our hope? What do we hope will result from each of us developing authentic fellowship, partnership, and relationships with one another? Anybody have any ideas on that? Hopefully, those in our community, people outside of Christ, will know that we are His disciples. How many times is one another found in the New Testament from our previous lessons? Anybody remember? Nobody remembers? At least 58, the phrase one another. 58. Thank you, Patrick. And do you remember how many times the phrase love one another is used out of those 58? 16. And the rest, we suggested or we submitted to you, teach us how to do the love one another. And that's what we're looking at this morning. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. We talk about the vertical relationships that we have. There's two main relationships that are very important that in our lives we need to focus on and concentrate on and work on and maintain and grow in. And that is, get this back up here. The vertical relationship, of course, is with God our Father, right? And we need to get that right. We need to be in a right relationship and fellowship with God. The other one is what we call on a horizontal plane, horizontal level, and that would be with God's family, with one another. And those relationships should also be right, and they should be special. Here this morning again, there's our 12:10. We're going to focus on honor preferring one another. And we're going to use Jesus and Paul as an example. And then next week we'll look at practical applications. The example of Jesus. You may not connect that with honor, but two or three weeks ago, remember that Sunday morning when we focused on, it was just a 10-15 minute talk, and we read, I think Cliff read John 13. Cliff and I read that. And I'm bringing it up again today, John 13. If y'all could turn there, chapter 13. We're going to use this as an example of honor. And what's the context here? What's the context in John 13? His Last Supper with them. He's eating the Passover meal with them about 24 hours before his death. And here Jesus is spending some special time with his chosen 12. If you look at the end of verse 1, he knew his hour had come that he would depart out of the world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world. How did he love them? He loved them to the end. And here, as at least as far as his life is concerned, is the end, just before his death, which is going to involve torture and beatings and then hanging upon that cross. And I don't know exactly all the details that Jesus knew in his mind about how he was going to suffer, but he knew he was going to suffer. Of course, we have the advantage now of looking ahead. We could read ahead and picture through our reading how he suffered, primarily upon that cross. And yet, what is he doing here during this supper with them? The focus is on him or on his disciples? That's right. The focus is not upon himself. Even though he's going to spend within 24 hours torture and agony and pain, and he's not focusing on himself. I can just imagine him thinking, how are my disciples going to respond to my death? How are they going to handle it? And he provides for them very heartfelt, meaningful instruction by the way of a real live example. Here, I've got PowerPoint slides up here. Jesus is going to use the best PowerPoint ever invented here in just a moment. Think about what the other Gospels reveal to us. If we read in the other Gospels, it's clear that leading up to this time, he had been telling his disciples about his coming kingdom. And what were they focused on in regards to the kingdom? Who's going to be the greatest? Who's going to sit at his right hand? Who's going to be on his left? Who's going to be on his right? And Jesus, time and time again, had been teaching them that his kingdom was different. It's not about personal honor. It's not about personal glory. And they simply did not comprehend that, did they? And that's revealed here in this chapter. How is that revealed here in this chapter? How can we tell that they did not comprehend exactly what Jesus' kingdom was all about? You tell me, did any of his disciples raise their hand and get up and volunteer to wash his feet? We could sit here today and read John 13 20 times, and that's not going to happen. You're not going to find where they got up and said, oh, wait a minute, Lord, we're going to wash your feet. Now, Peter begins to get the point here in a little bit. But what does Jesus do? He got up from supper, laid his garments aside, took a towel, girding himself. He poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet. I'm in verse 5. John 13, and to wipe their feet with the towel with which he was girded. Now, the light bulb comes on just a little bit with Peter. Because he came to Peter and Peter said what? Lord, do you wash my feet? He kind of gets it, doesn't it? Peter understands that he, Peter, should be washing the master's feet. That's the way things work in the human world, right? The servant washes the master's feet. You're the Son of God. Peter had confessed that a few days, months, weeks earlier. You are the Son of God. I should be washing your feet. Someone has said that Jesus' kingdom is the upside down kingdom. You ever heard of that phrase? The upside down kingdom. In human kingdoms, what would kings and princes and those in authority demand and expect and require of those underneath them in authority and their servants. To serve them, right? You do this for me, you do that for me, you do this with the finger pointing. Everything for the master, for the Lord, for the king. Jesus' kingdom's upside down. Here the master, the king, the creator of the universe is getting down and washing his disciples' stinky feet. Jesus said, what I do to you, you do not realize now, but you will understand later. Peter protested again, never will you wash my feet. And Jesus said, if I do not wash you, you have no part with me. And what does Peter respond? Lord, wash all of me then. Not only my feet, but also my hands and my head. And Jesus again, working with Peter to get the light bulb to come on, says, Peter, that's not what it's all about. It's deeper than that, Peter. It's deeper than just taking a bath. I'm not just cleaning your feet. So he finishes the foot washing of his disciples, and he gets up in verse 12. He washed their feet, taken his garments, and reclined at the table again, and he said to them, and I love the way Jesus works as the master teacher with his disciples and all those who followed him. He does an illustration like this. Here's our PowerPoint illustration. We're looking at the divine principle of Jesus honoring others above himself. So he does this visual that they can all see and they're all participating in. And then he asks the question, do you know what I have done to you? Well, what answer is he looking for? Yeah, Lord, you washed our feet. Is Jesus teaching us how to do foot washing ceremonies? No. Where's our answer? You call me Lord and teacher, verse 13, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and teacher, washed your feet, what should you also do? Kramer, do you know the answer there? Verse 14. You ought to do what? What is he telling there, Patrick? Verse 14. I wash your feet. What ought you to do?
Wash one another's
feet. Right. For I gave you an example that you should do as I. Now the example is washing feet. But again, that's the example. We got to bring this up to a higher level, right? Look at life in general. How can we do things like washing feet? It's the concept of serving one another, isn't it? Humble yourself. Do as I have done. Humble yourself. Focus on others. Be of service. Serve one another. Honor each other, and you will be blessed. See how he says that down there in 17? If you know these things, you are blessed. If you do them, you will be happy. Brethren, this should be the mark of our church family. This should be true of our church family. Honor others above yourself. That is the true mark of greatness, is it not? Honor others above yourself. Now, how many of you heard of I've never read it, but supposedly there was a book out a few years ago called Look Out for Number One. It was a bestseller. Look Out for Number One. In it is the idea of honor yourself above others. Look out for your own interests first, because if you don't, no one else is. Who's going to look after your interests? You are. That's the world's philosophy right now. Focus on yourself. And beloved brethren, I want you to consider the contrast to that. And we're going to do it as an example here. Kay, have you already done a count? How many, approximately?
67.
Okay, let's call it 70. So there's 70 people here today. Now let's suppose that we are operating on that philosophy. Look out for number one. Look out for yourself. All of us in here, that's what we're doing. We're looking out for number one. How many people are going to be looking out for your interests and behaving in your best interests? I got a finger back up there. One. You know who that is? It's you. If we're all looking out for number one, and it's us, then we're all looking out for ourselves. Now let's flip that around. If everyone here is sensitive and attentive to the needs of others and to the well-being of others, how many people will be looking out for your needs and your interests? 69. 70 if you include yourself. 69, that's right. So if we're a group of 150, 149. If we're a group of 3,000, 2,999 will be looking out for you. Right? If they're all operating on that. See the beauty of this principle here? The upside down kingdom. Learn this principle, beloved. Let's apply it to ourselves. It wasn't as much about the disciples as it was about Jesus and who he is and how he humbled himself. Learn the principle of what his kingdom is all about. We kind of skipped over the phrase in verse 11 because I didn't want to get distracted with it. But John records he knew the one who was betraying him. For this reason, he said, not all of you are clean. I'm picturing the fact that Judas has not left the group here yet, that when Jesus washed the feet of his disciples, he washed Judas' feet as well. What do you think the human side of Jesus might have been thinking at that time? Do you think the human side of Jesus may have struggled with that just a little bit? He knows what Judas is going to do. Here's the one betraying him, and he's washing his feet. Is that a wow moment? I think so. This is love and honor. This is loving your enemies in living color right there. This is a wonderful example of kingdom living, of divine, spiritual behavior, not carnal. People outside aren't going to see this at the Chamber of Commerce or the Elks or the Rotary or the Kiwanis. Now, some of those groups do good works for others, but this ongoing attitude of serving should be seen in Christ's body, right? Turn with me to Matthew. We got to see, do we have it up there? Matthew 23, 5 through 12. We're going to look at the human principle, honor self above others. Human beings struggle with self-glory and self-interest and honoring self above others, don't they? Here's another occasion in Matthew 23 where Jesus is teaching his disciples some lessons about how not to honor one another. Here in 23, especially the first part, Jesus is pointing out to them that the scribes and Pharisees, they do one thing pretty well. Their form is good. Their outward form is good. What is wrong with them? It's their motive. Their motive is wrong. They've got the outward form down, but their motive is wrong. And he lists some examples there. The things they do to be seen of men. The scribes and the Pharisees, they itched for affirmation of their piety, their religiousness. But it's not about being pious from their standpoint. It was about looking pious and looking for the praise of men. That's what they were all about. They were seeking the chief seats in the synagogue. They loved to hear their name, rabbi or father. And Jesus pointing out to them, avoid seeking honor to yourselves. Pointing this out to his disciples. If you seek honor in this life, brethren, we won't receive it in the next. If that's our whole goal and aim and purpose, to seek honor in this life. We won't receive it in the next. Let's look at this, changing from Matthew 23 to Philippians chapter 2. Not spending a lot of time on Matthew 23 or Philippians 2 because other speakers have actually dealt with those passages. But here we see a dynamic example that Paul gives. Paul's not the dynamic example, but Jesus is his example. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 3, you know what, people or brethren? Paul understood the saying that a man wrapped up in himself is a pretty small package. Have you ever heard that one? A man wrapped up in himself is a pretty small package. Philippians is moving around in my Bible, but we'll get there here. Philippians chapter 2, and down in 3, we'll begin. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another. Ding, 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 ding. You recognize that phrase? Regard one another as more important than yourselves. And do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Millions of times there's been sermons preached from this passage. I don't know how you could overemphasize it, though. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Jesus Christ. This here in verses 3, do not do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but regard one another as more important than yourselves, and don't look out for your own personal interests. Does that come naturally to most of us doing this thing here? I'm seeing some no's. If we're honest with ourselves, that does not come naturally. Paul describes the position of Jesus and the mindset that he had. What did he have there in heaven? He had glory, he had honor, he had power, he had immortality, he had heavenly dwelling, he was in the presence of God, and he gives it all up. He leaves the ivory palaces into the world of woe. Why? Why? To serve us. To serve man. God was mindful of man for a little while. If Jesus was serving his own interests and acting in his own interests, would he have been born of a virgin and endured the human frailties of human life and suffered on the cross like he did? No, he wouldn't have. But he knew he needed to do something for us which we couldn't do ourselves. Have this mindset in you, Paul encourages us. Jesus chose to give up honor. He emptied himself. He became a servant even to the death on a cross. And what was the result? What did God do for him, with him, to him? Starts with an E. He exalted him. So again, beloved, let's not just accept the gift of Jesus, but let's imitate his attitude. You know, honor is similar to some of the fruits of the spirits, like love and joy and peace. We're encouraged not to seek those things directly, but we receive those things as a byproduct of displaying those attitudes. And when we're busy about worthwhile things, this is the principle Jesus taught. You gain your life by doing what? Gain your life by losing it. So when we display these attitudes in our lives, then we'll receive. But if those things are the first thing we're after and we go out directly seeking those things, we're going to have trouble finding them. People that are the most happy are the ones that are busy about their Father's business, doing good, walking in faith, being a servant. They have a bounce in their step because they're serving with love, with joy, with peace, and they're placing others first. and they have a sense of purpose, and they're thankful for God's gifts, and they share what they know. Those are the ones that are happy. When we try to grab happiness directly, what's going to happen? We're going to be disappointed. Honor is kind of like catching butterflies. When I was a kid in Ohio, I'd go out to Aunt Rainey's farm, and there are butterflies all over the place. I'd get a little net, and I'm sure she laughed watching me from the house run around down the road trying to catch butterflies. They're not super fast like a fly, but they do a lot of diversion techniques, right? And they're they're tough to catch. But when you're sitting down on a swing or on a porch and just rocking sometimes somewhere, a butterfly might light on your shoulder. When you're not after it, chasing it, that's when the butterfly's lights right on your shoulder. That's what honor's kind of like. When we go out seeking honor and attention for ourselves, we're going to be disappointed. But when we give that to others, we're going to receive it, aren't we? That's the whole idea of Jesus teaching his disciples, put yourself last, not first. It's like a flower. The tighter you grasp and squeeze a fragile flower, the more likely you're going to destroy its beauty. Isn't that right? And we destroy the beauty of real honor and service if we seek honor for ourselves. Kelly and I have worked with several congregations. We've been here 20 plus years, but we've worked with congregations in the past where there was at least one congregation I can think of. There was a contingent who were kind of grumpy and whiny and complaining to the elders because they felt that, quote, their needs were not being met. And I guess that included not getting enough attention from the elders or from others in the church. And what's the response to that? How do you resolve those kind of attitudes? Well, each person has to change the attitude within themselves, right? But it starts out by looking outward. What can I do for this group? What can I do for others? And that just changes your whole attitude, doesn't it? And your grumpiness dissipates. And your whining and complaining. And I'm sure there are people in most congregations, small group, that can write up a list about things that they're disappointed in the elders for this and that, disappointed in other people. It just seems to be a dead church, you know, not much going on. There again, there's the question. Ask yourself, what can I do? What is it I can do to make things turn around? Get off the pouty pedestal, as I call it. What am I doing in regards to honoring others? And you might say, can you give me an example of service, of how one can serve others in a local congregation? Okay, I sure will. Irma's not here today. Irma's been incapacitated for several weeks. She's struggling with diverticulitis. I think that's under control, but then her doctor thinks the medicine messed up her knee. I thought that sounded real strange, but her knee's been bothering her, and she's been having to keep it in a brace and keep it out, and she's going stir crazy in her house. So on Saturday, not yesterday, but a week ago, we had a family in this church go over to her house, clean up the yard, do things that she couldn't do, rake up leaves and mow it, things like that. One family from this church, that's an example. And the reason I'm bringing that up is Irma is still in that situation. She goes to the doctor on the 15th. But here's an opportunity for those of us who may not be in that habit of getting out and doing a good work like that. You may say, is that a good work? Well, yeah, I think it falls into that category. It's a kind act. Call her up first. Maybe all she needs is a chat on the phone. Now, it's easy to say, well, that family did it a week ago. Good for them. Are they going to do it this week? I don't want to, you know, butt into their schedule. It's not going to hurt if Irma gets deluged with phone calls from us or any other folks that are in her situation here in this local group. There's an opportunity, folks, to show service and love to someone else in our group. There's a real live example. And you could probably think of others. And I've praised this group for doing those kind of things over the years. We just need to keep encouraging ourselves to do that. Because what happens is, and this is true with me, I can say, I am too busy. And I look at my schedule and I've spent 3 hours watching college football on Saturday, for example. Or 4 hours on Monday night. I would ask Ted, but I probably better not. You know, we say we're too busy, but then when we start looking at what we were busy with, think of how many Irmas you could help in a 4-hour football game or a hobby. And I'm not suggesting we throw all those things out. I'm just suggesting take a look at how we spend our time and see if we can refocus it to others. And not just to a select small group, but how can we spread the love, so to speak, and honor one another and be devoted to one another. Okay, I appreciate your attention. Now we're going to focus again on Jesus. We've been focusing on Jesus and his service. Now we're going to honor him and what he did, how he humbled himself after he washed their feet. And he went to the cross and suffered. We're going to think about that some more. We were going to do a song first, right? Sing a song together, and then we'll partake. Thank you for your attention.
Next week, we'll
get into the practical application of this. Practical steps for applying the principle. We'll get in peel off some onion layers of how to honor one another practically. Thank you. Let's go.